Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives, sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. The World Health Organization says more than 70% of us experience trauma, and 78% of those who've had a traumatic experience end up developing post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. You know, I'm thinking with everything that's happened, all the world events of the last few years, there are many people who probably fall into this category right now. And those who are regular listeners know that I'm a huge believer in the healing power of nature. I've seen it, I've experienced it, I continue to live it. And over the years, we've aired several shows on healing with mindfulness and nature. Today, we're adding somatic healing to that and how, combined with mindfulness and nature, somatic therapy can help you move past trauma and PTSD. And we have a great expert to discuss this with us. She's a psychologist specializing in mindfulness, nature-based therapy, and somatic experiencing. Dr. Rochelle Calvert works with individuals struggling with life transitions, depression, anxiety, PTSD, pain conditions, eating disorders, as well as families of developmentally delayed children and adults. Dr. Calvert's a clinical psychologist in private practice in San Diego. She's also the founder of New Mindful Life and teaches classes, courses, workshops, and retreats across America. She's very, very involved in what she's doing with this focus. She's the author of a book that I really highly recommend. I've seen a lot of books come across my desk over the years, and you know, I always know I've hit a really great one when I mark it up considerably, and this one is definitely marked up a lot. The book is called Healing with Nature, Mindfulness and Somatic Practices to Heal from Trauma. And here is my guest, Dr. Rochelle Calvert. Dr. Rochelle Calvert, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Vicki, for having me.
I was telling you before we came on that I really love this book. This is a subject I am 100% invested in, and I can't wait to share some of your work with our listeners. You've been teaching the practices you share in your book, Healing with Nature, for many years, and I always think this type of work is constantly evolving. So now, why was now the right time for you to write the book?
Well, the conditions lined up, I think is the simplest answer, but, you know, this has been a growing love of mine to want to share in some more concrete form for quite a number of years, and the experiences we've been through in the past year and a half, 2 years, you know, really affirmed that this was necessary to continue to write and to continue to put this work out there. And, you know, I was very blessed that in the midst of our pandemic beginning, that I had been wanting this book to become a reality. And the folks at New World reached out within the first week of the pandemic and said, "Will you write this?" And I thought, what a beautiful time to actually be called into fully writing it. It had been brewing, but and it really was a gift, actually, to be able to bring it into this form in this last year with all that we went through. So yeah. I'm grateful for that, and grateful for the time that it took to evolve to get it to that point.
Yeah, I mean, if there is such a thing, divine timing, for sure, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about mindfulness on the show before. We've talked about the power of nature and healing. You have a slightly different angle on this because you focus on trauma and how nature and mindfulness and somatic experience can help us heal. So I want to begin by looking at trauma, because I know one of your goals with the book is to widen the understanding of trauma, to provide the tools and practices to heal. So I want to share a couple of quick stats with our listeners, because I was quite shocked about this. 70% of us experience trauma. 78% of those who've had a traumatic experience end up developing PTSD. So let's share your definition of trauma for the purposes of your book for our conversation today.
Yeah, and thank you for bringing that into context to share, because I do feel passionate about helping people understand what trauma really means in the broader sense of it. You know, we classically think about, most people when they hear the word trauma will classically identify it as, you know, physical, a sexual assault or a combat experience or a natural disaster, but really the field in the work of trauma is really beginning to expand that in so many different ways. And the definition that's evolving is really, it's an experience that we've gone through in our lives that's distressing or dysregulating to us in some way, some event or some experience that's happened that causes significant distress, that at that moment we did not have the resources to really bear on it, to bring ourselves back into a sense of regulation. And because of not having those resources, we can feel a sense of being out of control, or we can feel a sense of being disconnected to a way of taking care of ourselves. And what can happen is, as that experience goes on, and those are our reactions to that distressing event, ultimately, if we didn't actually find resolution or regulation, then we go on to take those patterns that we evolved to try to just get through it, however we got through it, into other aspects of our life. And so when we start to think about this definition of trauma as this kind of broader sense of being, you know, out of control, having a distressing event, not feeling like we were equipped enough to deal with what was happening, it really begins to make sense. There are so many different variants of what it actually could be more defined as what is a traumatic event. You know, this last year,
right,
the pandemic was a traumatic event. The climate crisis could be seen that way. You know, medical procedures that we maybe went through. You know, all kinds of different types of variants of what that actually might be. And really, what I like to encourage people to consider is that it really is what you individually define it as. You can put in the event of what meets that definition that I just offered that might actually, you know, someone else may have not experienced that as traumatic, but for you it was.
Right.
For you, that experience of going through it, it had those pieces of the way you experienced it, and it can get left or stuck and really wreak havoc on our mind, body, and heart if we don't have the tools to actually be able to resolve or find a way to heal from that experience.
Right, right. And this is what I found interesting in your book, many things, but this to start off with was that, yes, we have these built-in systems to protect us, and yet so much of us suffer long-term unnecessarily, really, because we haven't dealt with it. It's there stuck in our body. And I know most of our listeners for sure are familiar with the flight or fight response. But you talk about a third way that we often try to protect ourselves, and that's by freezing. And I was thinking, I can remember when my father died, it was such a shock because he looked so, you know, my dad was 6'4" and he looked the picture of health, and suddenly, you know, he's facing this life-ending situation.
Yep.
And I went into that freeze state. I recognized that when I was reading your work. So would you talk to us a little bit about that and what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I'm grateful you're bringing that into the conversation. The unexpected loss of a loved one, right? And having to go through that is absolutely and can be in that definition of trauma. And, you know, we will, however we get through that experience, we just do the best we can with the resources we have. And then we will sometimes pick one of those, or maybe a few of them, even the fight, flight, or the freeze response, to just try to get through, because we don't know another way. And with the freeze response, really is this kind of ability to just make ourselves kind of check out from the difficulty, because there just feels like there's not an option. We can't really fight with what's going on. We can't really run from what's going on. And so freeze becomes the available option. And that sense of, well, if I just kind of, you know, pretend I'm not here, or just kind of check out or distract myself, you know, or you know, a lot of people will experience numbing or a sense of losing a sense of who they are, because it's just a way to escape, ultimately, the intensity that we're going through that we just don't have another way to manage. And evolutionarily, we've really kind of evolved into this third response. The fight or flight responses have, you know, helped human beings survive, but, you know, our human beingness has really changed in the last few hundred years, and this evolution towards the freeze response has really become another way of trying to cope. But ultimately, once we start using that pathway to cope through the event and we don't find resolution to it, we can go on to continue to use that method of dealing with stress or other difficult things in the future. And then people struggle with, I don't know why I'm just always so distracted, or I can't stay focused, or I can't, you know, keep my mind on track with things. We've evolved in that reactionary pattern of just trying to cope with what was so difficult to overuse it in ways. And again, that's another signal that that undigested, unhealed trauma hasn't really had a chance to be healed. And so we just keep using something that we think is supposed to work or it's trying to help us, but really leaves us disconnected from ourselves.
Right, right. You say the best way to look at trauma is as a learning experience, a reason to grow and change, to find greater purpose. And I think that's true of the situation we've been in for the last 12 months or so, actually a little more than that. Would you put that in that category?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If, you know, and again, if we're looking at it like how much it took from us or how much it limited us or how much it, you know, made us stuck in some way, we're kind of defaulting into those fight or freeze patterns that don't really serve us in that situation. And what we have been through in the last year, yes, traumatic. And a lot of what I'm pointing to in the book is finding a new relationship to the difficulties that we are or have experienced. These traumas could be sources of wisdom. They could be sources of allowing yourself to have more resilience. And, you know, people that have, you know, found a way in this last year with all that we've been through to really transform the relationship to the trauma or the difficulty itself are finding more, you know, resilience and strength in their lives, even amidst what's happened this last year.
Yes, and I've heard from many people, you're probably hearing the same, that some are having problems reintegrating into the world at large.
Yes.
And so the tools and practices you have in your book, I want to stress to anyone who's feeling that way, could be really, really helpful. I want to talk about body awareness. Somatic experience is a body awareness treatment that I was not particularly familiar with. Would you share a little of that theory around this and how it's related to trauma and healing?
Yeah, absolutely. So somatic healing or somatic experiencing is a trauma-informed approach that was developed many decades ago now by Peter Levine. And the approach really is that the trauma that we've experienced in our lives, whatever that has been, ultimately because we couldn't get through that event in the way maybe we'd hoped, that event and the difficulties of it become stuck in the body and in the nervous system. And so our nervous system, once that trauma's kind of stuck in the body and in the way that we're experiencing ourselves, that stuckness leads to the creation of those patterns of overusing the fight, flight, or freeze. And so we continue thinking that we'll use those patterns to try to unstick the trauma from the body, but ultimately not really getting us anywhere. So this theory invites us into really being present into the body, to learn how to discover where in the body the experiences of the trauma might actually be physically experienced, and learning skillful means to turn towards that and to be able to reconnect to it in a different way, and through some practices and various approaches, be able to release it from the body. And how these practices support us is once that's kind of unstuck or released or transformed from the nervous system, all these unhealthy maybe behaviors or challenges of our mental or emotional well-being begin to shift, because it's no longer, this residue of the trauma is no longer stuck in the body. It's not this nervous system kind of trying to constantly get it out in skillful ways with our inner capacities to shift and transform that so that we can allow that trauma to release and feel more embodied, feel more ourselves again.
Right. And you share exercises in the book so that we can find out where that trauma resides and release it ultimately. And I think that's important because, you know, people who are going through the after effects of trauma often say, well, you know, everyone keeps telling me just to, you know, change my mindset and think positive. Right. And it's not as simple as that. And I've heard from many listeners saying, you know, well, you talked about this today, but it's not as simple as that. So this might be a missing component for many of those people who aren't moving through trauma.
Right, right. And the sense of that we get this message, we should just move on from it. We should just fix it, you know, be done with it, change your perspective. We're missing that. We're trying to do that all through the mental landscape, but your body is the vehicle that was in the midst of that trauma, and it didn't get a chance to assert or engage in the way that it felt it probably needed to because of the conditions and lack of resources that were happening in that moment, to really bring the body into a sense of regulation and resource. And so these practices absolutely give people greater access to moving out of the mind needing to fix it and moving into the wisdom of the body and the wisdom of the way the body can move and reorganize and heal itself to allow that trauma to shift.
Right, right. So let's talk about nature. I spent so much time in nature. I was mortified to read some of the statistics you share in the research in your book. The average American spends 87% of their time indoors, 11 hours of our day watching, reading, listening to, or interacting with our tablets, smartphones, computers, or TV. That I can believe, but 87% of our time indoors. And of course, that leads to all kinds of issues, right?
Yes, yes, definitely. Yeah, and it is a shocking statistic. And I think even more so, I would imagine if we did the research from the past year, I think it would be a slightly different number. But I will also say, you know, something that I was very inspired by this last year too, is that people were finding that even if they just stepped out on their patio or they walked in their neighborhood and they took themselves out of their home because they needed to, just to, for the change of scenery, change of pace, we were getting more connection to nature. And, you know, we are primal creatures. We, you know, thrive actually in nature. We're made of nature to be with her. So, you know, one of the reasons I began to weave in nature so intimately with both mindfulness and somatic healing practices was the container of nature herself is just alluring and supportive and relaxing to our nervous system. You know, we walk outside and we see a blue sky and it's just, you know, there's a natural inclination to soften. Mm. And so we can, you know, really lean ourselves into that support. And, you know, there's lots of growing research on, regardless if we decided to spend time practicing mindfulness or somatic healing with nature, just standing outside for 5 minutes in nature allows our heart rate to slow. We relax our facial muscles. We quiet our prefrontal cortex. So just 5 minutes of just being out there. So it, you know, my own experience of working with people and my own personal experiences, it was just such a lovely way to allow ourselves to deepen into these healing experiences within ourselves with the potency of nature supporting our abilities to heal.
Yes, I have friends who love to garden and they say no matter how stressful their day, you know, 5 minutes with their hand in the soil and everything's forgotten. And of course you don't have to go out there and do anything physical, just as you said, being out in nature and you know, listening and experiencing what's happening out there. This morning, I want to ask you about this because you do write about this in the book. This morning, I listened to a podcast with Dr. Michael Gervais. He's a high-performance psychologist. He was talking with Rich Roll, who's a podcaster I listen to. He's also a high-endurance athlete. And Dr. Gervais said that he was running, I think this was in his first endurance race, and he hit around mile 20 when he came face to face with himself, and he was not very comfortable with it. He felt loneliness, abandonment, isolation. And he started thinking about how many people talk about the importance of nature, and he realized at that moment that he himself was nature, that you are nature, that we are nature. And before he could connect with nature, he had to reconnect with his own nature, with himself. So I wanted to get your thoughts around that, because you write in the book, in the Ecosystems of Healing, that we are made of nature, our biology is of the earth, and we too have biological cycles and systems. And when we understand them, we can help our internal systems regulate themselves. I shortened that, but that was the gist of it.
Beautiful, beautiful synopsis and shortening of that. It's really true. And yeah, what a beautiful insight for him to reflect on that and experience that, that, you know, we get so disconnected and have some idealized version that our mind is typically constructing to, you know, think who we are, when we forget that we really are these intricate, beautiful web of systems and operating processes that function and thrive just like nature does. You know, we walk outside and we see the way that a garden will grow, right? It works together. It organizes itself. It's thriving in service of itself. And that's true about our inner systems too. And so if we start to feel like, wait, you know, I'm made of the earth too, you know. We have some of the same, you know, nutrients in our body that are found in the earth. That's true. We're not separate from what's in the earth is what's in the body. You know, we breathe air. When we breathe the oxygen into our bodies, that's offered from the plants. When we exchange that carbon dioxide out, we're giving it back to them. We're participating. We are of nature, and we are made of nature. And so this ability to not just have her be of support to help us rest our nervous systems and our body into these healing potentials, but that we begin to wake up to the greater sense of our wholeness, the greater sense of our nature. There's a practice in the book that I, as we build some development of this, in earlier chapters, where I invite us to explore the elements in the body.
Yes.
And that all of these elements that we can feel, we feel when we, you know, connected to the sun, or we are feeling water or air or earth, all of that is true in our bodies too, and is in reciprocity with what's happening in the outer world. And so we can really begin to kind of settle into that feeling of we are nature. And that begins to be a beautiful foundation or ground in which to begin to rewrite the relationship or explore the way we can work with the traumas. Because just like nature, you know, and there's many beautiful expressions of this in nature where there might be a trauma in nature, but the systems that work around it continue to support helping it to thrive. Like when a broken branch is, you know, fallen off of a tree, you can look and see how the tree itself and even the conditions around it have repaired it to still allow it to thrive. And that's true about us too. And so if we can form that deeper sense of really what our bodies, what our minds, our hearts are really made of, we'll have a healthier way to move towards those difficulties that we maybe feel stuck by.
Right. I'm always amazed as well by how nature adapts. You know, there's a tree on the beach by me where the cliff is eroding drastically, unfortunately. And that tree is doing everything it can to stay alive. It's bending, it's stretching its roots, it's leaning backwards. I mean, it is doing everything it can to adapt to its sad situation.
Yes. And we do this too. And forming that, like, ability to see that no matter, even if we've got stuck trauma and we've developed patterns that we don't really maybe view as the ones we really want, they've just been a way to adapt and evolve. And if we continue to grow a sense of, you know, kind awareness to what's happening on this experience of being and inhabiting our bodies, we'll find a more resilient way to thrive through whatever that difficulty has been, just like the tree.
Right. I want to talk about noticing barriers in the inner landscape. And there are a couple of things. I mean, you talk about issues, and then you talk about practices that can help us through that. And You know, one of them, I think, has been obviously worry with everything that's been happening, you know, politics, which is still going on, mm-hmm. and the pandemic, which is still going on. A lot of uncertainty, a lot of people worrying, feeling restless. You know, do I want to go back to my job? Do I want to quit and do something entirely different with my life? And you say that restlessness and worry are associated with a mind, body, or heart that's agitated and unable to set down. And once we identify the barrier or experience it differently, we can start doing something about it. So would you tell us how we recognize this and deal with it?
Yeah. And the word barrier itself, I think, is worth, you know, offering that it's an opportunity. We don't need to see it as something that we're going to have to get through or get over.
Right.
It really is an invitation when we start to feel those experiences of the worry or the restlessness, and this is what we explore in the middle part of the book, where if we can turn towards those more challenged or barrier-like experiences, stuckness within us, with the sensitivity of presence, with mindfulness, with a sense of really inhabiting that experience of the worry or the restlessness in the body. Where does it live? It's a really good question to just ask yourself. It's a very simple practice when you start to feel the mind whipping up around those types of thoughts. Stepping out of the mind trying to solve this for a moment and just really getting curious about where is it in my body? You might feel like there's restlessness in your arms or in your chest or in your belly. And through the practice of awareness and somatically feeling into what's happening with that particular barrier of worry or restlessness, we can start to find a new relationship to it and beginning to see that, oh, worry is like this in my body, or, oh, restlessness feels like this. You know, it's kind of an analogy like this. We might be like, you walk outside on a windy day. You don't ask the wind to stop. The wind is just being the wind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we try to run from it or protect ourselves from it, but ultimately that's just its job. And at that moment, that barrier of the worry and restlessness is an invitation for you to learn how to turn towards it.
Yeah.
And if we can support ourselves, and again, it's these more difficult states to be with, going outside, being in connection with nature, feeling how, you know, the trees will move and flex in the wind. Can you ride your own inner experience with your awareness in that same kind of way? It doesn't have to take you down the stream. And typically we go down the stream because the mind is taking us there, with its constructs and its ideas of what we should be doing or how it should be working or whatever that resistance is. But just dropping back into the body and dropping back into that sense of being present with the feelings, the sensations, ebbing and flowing, rising and passing. And then we begin to see it's not really a barrier. It's an energy that's in us, and we might need to support it in a different way, right? Like moving a little more.
Yes.
You know, making sure we're talking to people that we love and we feel connected to, instead of just kind of churning on it. By finding a new relationship to it, we'll find the wisdom to choose a more skillful way to work with it.
Yes, and tiredness and dullness is another one you talk about. And of course, we've all been experienced this, right? I think everybody's experienced this to some level. And one of the things you talk about is having the curiosity to find out why you're feeling that way, to acknowledge it, not necessarily to do anything about it at that time, but to acknowledge it. So I think the practices here will really help people open up and, you know, become more whole.
Yeah, that's my hope, is that we have a greater capacity to be with our inner ecosystems, inner landscape, with the support of all these outer healing ecosystems, and that we find a greater sense of ourselves.
Mm.
Not feel so stuck and challenged by the experiences we've been through, but rather create transformation through them.
Yeah, absolutely. There are people who don't appreciate nature. You know, I can think of a couple of friends, if I said, hey, come out for a walk with me, they'd kind of roll their eyes and go, I'd rather go shopping or something. How do you encourage those people to get out?
Yes.
Because I know personally the benefits of it. I've seen it in other people too. So,
Yeah, I think we can just start where we are. You know, do they have a house plant? Do they enjoy looking out at the sky? You know, there's a lot of different ways to invite simple, small things rather than going into a, you know, deep, expansive, spacious place of nature. Nature's always with us, you know, and even another way, I think we forget that even the home that we sit in is actually made of nature. You know, the place that we sit, the place that we lay our heads, all of that is some form of nature. And so there's a way to connect, whether or not it's through the, you know, clear animated version of what nature reveals itself to, or, you know, the forms that we've created out of nature.
Right.
And I think even that can be a way to just, you know, you lay your head down on your pillow and appreciate the cotton and the cotton plant. And the, you know, sense of the softness of that being able to support your head, and how that itself, just being present like that, might be a way to connect to nature.
Interesting. And I think getting kids out in nature at a young age is always a good thing. If they grow up with this kind of appreciation, I think it carries through into later life.
Yeah, definitely. There's growing research on that as well. We can have, you know, outdoor times at school, although that's been pretty limited this last year. There has been a growing way to bring nature into the educational setting, actually, and parents, you know, just inviting your family to go on a walk and to spend a little more time outside, to dig in the dirt with them for a little while, encourage them to make a mud patty, you know.
Yeah.
Things that they would normally play with, the toys in the house, can equally be played with outside, and yeah, absolutely develop that early relationship and connection and kin with nature.
Yeah, my niece, actually, during the start of the pandemic, she had her two daughters out in the garden starting a vegetable garden, and they grow all of their vegetables now, so they're doing really well.
Beautiful.
I know I have to let you go. I could talk to you for hours, but before we go, you say that when we've healed, we can heal others, we can heal out into the world, and I just want you to finish on that, if you would, because I know that's important to you.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate your bringing that in at the end of our talk. Yeah, I really, you know, my heart's desire with this work is that we are connected and wake up to our true nature, our sense of nature within us, and find these healing ways and reciprocity with nature, that uniquely invites each of us to want to connect, to heal outward, to heal onward. If trauma begets more trauma, then healing is going to beget more healing. And so if we're healing with nature, that the invitation that some way of connecting and healing and supporting back, the necessary ways we're all going to have to participate in helping our Earth to heal from all of the experiences that she's suffering. The invitation in the last part of the book and different practices, explore what that looks like. It might just be in your immediate circle of your family and friends, but you really begin to create a more engaged way of seeing, you know, your family and friends as nature, and how you want to treat them in a different light, in a different way. And it may be as radical to get involved with, you know, environmental movements, but that last section really points to that. And again, my deep wish is that each individual person who touched by this book is able to heal their traumas with nature, and that in turn, in that support that she's offered and these practices that are experienced and developed, that is a desire and an intent to get back to her.
Lovely. Well, Dr. Rochelle Calvert, it's been such a pleasure talking with you. I really love your book. It's called Healing with Nature, Mindfulness and Somatic Practices to Heal from Trauma. And I know listeners can find out much more about you and your work at newmindfullife.com, newmindfullife.com. And before we go, a final thought you'd like to leave everyone with?
Such a good question. I think my final thought would be, yeah, we all have the potential to heal and the potential to transform our trauma and to take that journey for yourself, whatever way that looks like. And that will have a ripple effect. It will create more healing within your life. within your community and then beyond.
I love it. Dr. Rochelle Calvin, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Vicky. It was great to be with you.
And I want to thank everyone for joining us today. Questions, comments, or feedback on today's show, you can find me through our website at conversationslive.net. Please join us next week. Until then, live well, live strong.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.